This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner's Wes Durham. The throat, the voice has got to be great because last night,
everything's solid.
NC State, Carolina, the game was outstanding. We got a ton of stuff to get into, a lot of awards to give out today as well, including Players of the Year, Coach of the Year, all that kind of stuff. So hang tight. We got great guests, and we'll get you ready for the holidays. So with that said, Mr. Durham, good ball game last night, NC State, North Carolina, and no court storming, but Wolfpack Nation feeling pretty good this morning.
Yeah, should feel pretty good. Got off to a great start. Got a great lift off their bench. They were not at whole. DJ Funderburk still sat out last night for the Wolfpack. Cam Hayes returned for them in a role last night. And, boy, Shaquille Moore. Pack, how many times have we seen in the State Carolina series? A young man grows up in North Carolina, you know, watches ACC basketball and that kind of thing and gets a chance to play in the league. And in his first at bat, so to speak, in the series, whether it's State Carolina, Duke State. Next thing you know, he's off the bench, drilling threes, dunking off the baseline. I mean, I just thought Shaquille Moore was really fun to watch last night in his first venture into the series. And NC State played well. And Carolina, again, a slow start, a little sloppy with the turnovers pack.
Yikes.
Came from 16 down. There's Moore going baseline, by the way. Pretty solid. And the Wolfpack ends up winning 79-76, and off they go. So congratulations to Kevin Keats and the Wolfpack on a strong start in the conference. I like Carolina's young people, but Pack, the slow start thing, I'm slightly concerned about. The turnovers, I think Coach Williams got a lot to be concerned about. They got to cut that number down if they're going to be successful in the ACC, and I think they will with Love and Davis, who are talented. And I really like De'Ron Sharp to go with some of these other guys inside. Garrison Brooks was at the top of the scouting report, and NC State made it pay off last night.
Here's a problem. North Carolina, 6 of their 8 games, they have fallen behind in the first half by double digits. I don't care how talented you are. You keep playing with fire, you're going to lose a bunch of games. That's a bad combo. North Carolina's got to figure that thing out. You know, I know we're going to get some stocking stuffers later in the show for everybody from fans and everything else, but I may get Roy Williams an alarm clock because whatever's going on, his team doesn't seem to be dialed in to about the second or third TV timeout when they kind of wake up and realize, okay, all right, we're down 12, we're down 16, let's go play. And, you know, when you're playing the likes of, you know, the Iowas and Texas of the world, you can't do that against good teams. And NC State and North Carolina, anytime they get together, that's going to be a good time. And NC State's going to be excited to see them. And, you know, again, here we go again. North Carolina, the first half, you're down 16, 17, whatever the number was. And North Carolina has showed fight, which I think, again, the good news for North Carolina fans is the team doesn't quit. There's some pridefulness in terms of, hey, we're better than this. And they come roaring back from double digits. They cut it to 1 last night. But you just can't put yourself in a hole. You mentioned the turnovers. They have not shot the ball well either from that perspective. But the good news for NC State is, hey, you got the win. I mean, we gave you the stat yesterday. Roy was, what, 32-4 against NC State and staking over in Chapel Hill? The wins are few and far between. But for NC State, holding serve, knocking off your rival, even with the loss of Funderburk not being in the lineup, I mean, that's a terrific win for NC State last night.
And cannot speak to the improvement of Manny Bates, a young man from Fayetteville, North Carolina, who has really developed into an efficient player for the Wolfpack. Another strong effort last night. Not only does he block shots, but he also terrific kind of keeping the ball alive. Decent scorer. I think he's got a chance to be a consistent double-figure scorer for him. But really like the young players, too. Moore and Hayes in particular. I didn't get to see much of Jalen Gibson last night. But kind of excited to see what – I think the Wolfpack's got a real honest-to-goodness chance, Pack, to kind of crack that front third. I think they've got a chance to make a run toward that front third. Now, key element here is got to stay healthy. How many times now are we starting to see health? And I know the COVID thing is – that's a whole separate issue. But from a health perspective, man, we saw it hit Pitt last night, right? Right before the game, hour before the contest. The announcement that Justin Champagne will miss 6 to 8 weeks. And Audis Toney – at least a couple of weeks. I mean, that's the kind of thing right there from a health perspective nobody can afford in this college basketball season.
Well, you're right, 100%. And I don't care what the sport is, you got to stay relatively healthy. And with COVID, you got to stay safe and healthy on top of it. But I'm with you with NC State. You know, this ACC men's basketball right now, and I know we'll touch base with Jay Billis later on, it's an enigma at the top. I mean, it really is. I still think Florida State, I know I said last week they're the safest bet. Then they lose at home and lose all those streaks and all that stuff. I have confidence in them to be one of those teams. Virginia gets a win yesterday. We'll talk about that. You know, they beat William and Mary. You're supposed to beat them by 100. They won by 36. I think, 12 different players scored yesterday afternoon. Yeah. But we'll get a handle on Virginia this weekend when they play the Zags. And I said to Greenberg yesterday, if you've not seen Gonzaga play, man, do so. They are terrific. I mean, that is a team that looks like, that, you know, like we talked about watching football this year when Clemson opened at Wake. You're like, man, Clemson looks like they've been playing for 2 months. The Zags look like they've been ready for March. I mean, they are really talented and good and big and quick and can score. And Virginia's going to have their hands full. We'll talk about that game later with Jay. So, you know, Virginia's kind of an unknown. Duke will get better. But they've got work to do. We've talked about North Carolina and the slow starts. Louisville, after getting destroyed, Wisconsin, they got some guys back. They won yesterday against the Pitt, which we'll talk about in a second. They got Kentucky this weekend. So what we at least perceived as the top four or five teams in the league, man, it's you just kind of go, I'm not sure yet. I mean, you know, hey, season started November 25th. I mean, Christmas is Friday. That's a month. Starts, stops, injuries, weird results. But yet the middle part of the league looks like it's got some zing. It got some zing to it. You mentioned NC State. I think Virginia Tech, Clemson, Syracuse are teams that immediately come off the top of your head that you go, you know what? They might be a lot better than advertised. So the league's kind of in a weird spot. Nobody in the top 15 in the country, first time since December of 1961. That streak came to an end the week before. Nobody in the top 10. We went 461 straight weeks on that. Doesn't appear that there's any great teams early, right? Doesn't appear to be. But you may have seven or eight glob at the top. How about that? How about a glob at the top? That might be our new name.
Glob
new name.
At the top.
Glob at the top. I mean, it's kind of what it feels like right now because I really, and I kidded around with you about doing accounting next week in hoops. I don't even know where to start. I mean, really, I really wouldn't know where to start with ACC hoops. Uh-oh. What happened to us? My man froze on me again. Froze on me just like that. Are we going to go through this again yesterday? Because, you know, my man yesterday was on time. Let me just emphasize. He was on time yesterday. I had people send me emails. Pack, I know why you're going solo. Wes wasn't right. No, Wes was on time yesterday. All right, so let me go through some more games from last night. Obviously, NC State takes care of business. We talked about Pitt, injury issues, right? They jump on Louisville last night, and we gave you all the stats yesterday. Louisville has flat-out owned Pittsburgh on the hardwood. And when you play Louisville right before the holiday, before Christmas, they've won. They made it 12 in a row in that department. So last night, Cards, no problem. David Johnson goes for 17 points, 11 rebounds. Williamson went for 14 and 12, and no problem, man. Cards do their thing. They get the bad taste out of their mouth from the effort against Wisconsin. They know what's coming up this weekend with Kentucky, and that'll be a great one in the Commonwealth. It always is. And for Pitt, you got to stay healthy, man. I mean, you lose Penny and Tony, you're taking basically 35 points a game out of the lineup, and they just don't have the punch. So Louisville takes care of business. They were a plus 19 on the rebound side. So a good win for the Cards as they take care of business on the road. Couple of non-conference games yesterday as well. Mentioned Virginia. They jumped on William and Mary. 12 different players scored. No problem. They win 76-40. But the big question is going to be, okay, beat Kent State in overtime, pause the program for a little bit with the COVID stuff, you get back to action, you take care of business, you dominate William and Mary, no surprise there. But this weekend, Virginia is going to take on the number one team in the country in the Zags. And playing number one has not been an easy thing for the Hoos. Yeah, I know Tony Bennett's had great success. No question. But Virginia against number one ranked teams, it has not been pretty. They have lost 20 in a row to the number one team in the country. UVA, I'm talking now, has lost 20 in a row to the number one. And they're going to get number one this weekend with the Zags. So, again, we'll talk to Jay Billis about that later on in the program. There was one other non-conference game yesterday, and that was Boston College. I don't see Wes. I hear him, but I don't see him. I hear him in the background, far distance. But yesterday afternoon, Boston College took care of Maine, beat him by 16. Jay Heath went for 16. The good news for BC, they finally snapped the losing streak. Four straight they'd lost, but they take care of business. They beat Maine. And I'm not going to tell you it was a must win, but it was a need to win. I mean, BC's played a really tough schedule. We know about what happened when Syracuse rolled in there about a week and a half ago and lit them up by about 1,000. But BC gets the win, and that's good news for Jim Christian. Had to start feeling a little bit better about life on that standpoint. So there it is. So, all right, before we get cranked up with some other stuff, I'm going to switch gears real quick before we get Wes back on here. The numbers came out yesterday regarding the college football weekend. Of course, we just had championship Saturday. Clemson knocks off Notre Dame. We hyped it up. The biggest game in the history of ACC football. Well, guess what? The numbers don't lie. 10.2 million viewers for the ACC championship game between Clemson and Notre Dame. It was the most viewed conference championship game of the weekend, far succeeding and surpassing the SEC by over 1 million folks. Now, the reason I bring that up are twofold. Number one, it was the most watched ACC championship game ever, and it should have been. It was the biggest football game this league's ever had. Number two, it was an afternoon slot, right? It wasn't the primetime game. It was the afternoon slot and still generated that number. And maybe even more importantly, you know what? The game was basically over at halftime. To still be able to generate those kind of numbers on a game that felt like it was over at the half is really impressive. As a matter of fact, it peaked at 11.6 million around halftime. So can you imagine if that game had been tight, third or fourth quarter game, what the numbers could have been? But still, nevertheless, the ACC with the most watched conference championship football game over the weekend. So it just keeps adding on to this crazy season, which sees the ACC with five teams in the top 25 right now in terms of the College Football Playoff Committee. That's more than any other league. You see the Atlantic Coast Conference with two teams in the College Football Playoffs, more than anybody else. First time the league's ever accomplished that. You throw the TV number in like you do with what happened on Saturday. Again, we're going to have more awards and all that stuff coming up. Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year. This has been a really kind of a spectacular season for the conference.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Oh, we got awards, Wes. Live announcements. Players and Rookies of the Year coming up at the top of the hour. The Coach of the Year at 9 a.m. this morning. We'll break it all down for you. The official announcement right here on Packer and Durham. All right, he's back from Cartersville. You doing all right down there? You gonna make it?
to quote the great philosopher Marshawn Lynch, I've been here the whole time. I mean, I'm just sitting here trying to figure out what's going on. We got these new information superhighway processes we're going through, but no, everything's good. And looking forward to the players and rookies of the year and the coach of the year coming up before we're done at 10 o'clock. And by the way, Larry Pendley's on this show. Have we signed some sort of confidentiality paperwork that you guys aren't going to be allowed to talk about certain things here when he joins us?
Larry and I, there's about, I don't know, a half dozen people in my life that we have agreed that if we ever get in public on television or radio, that we would be nice to each other and not spill all the secrets. So mm-hmm. I look forward to getting Larry on here, and he's done an incredible job. Friend for life, saw the earth, just a great dude. And so Larry's in his 38th year as the golf coach at Clemson. So who knows what kind of stories will come up, but there are some I know will not come up. And it's a two-way street. That's the best thing about it. These are two-way street stories that, hey, okay, you want to get cute? All right, do you remember when? You know, one of those routines. So
yeah,
we'll get Larry on here and have a good time. Jay Billis will join us too later on. to talk about this crazy hoop thing. And I told you, glob at the top. Wes, I really don't have a feel at all for our league when it comes to the men. The women, you know, hey, we know Louisville's really good. We know NC State's really good. We know Syracuse is good. And then there's there's the glob for the ladies that's like right behind those three. And there's a handful of teams that can really jump in the top 25 and make some noise. But the men, it's at the top because we don't know what's at the top. And normally it's an automatic that you've got three or four teams in the top 10, top 15, and then you have all the jockeying in the middle like we did last year, and that's normally the case. Mm-hmm. So far, right now, I think there's like seven teams that you're like, hey, they might be the best team in the league tonight, you know, and that could very well be the case. So it's going to be interesting to watch that form as the year goes on.
Let me ask you this. Had Florida State not lost to UCF last Saturday, would you feel a little better about Florida State and then have questions about the others, but because of the loss, now you loop them back?
Yes. And I still think they may be the best team, even with the loss. But I thought there was a, hey, they've kind of established who they are. And then, okay, Virginia, Duke, you know, Louisville, North Carolina, you guys who we thought were going to be really, really good, you know, fake left, go right. But Florida State kind of came back to the pack a little bit with that L. That was just totally unexpected. And to be honest with you, the first half against Gardner-Webb was kind of like the holiday doldrum, hey, let's just get through this thing. And they didn't shoot the ball very well. So I still have total faith in Leonard's guys. I still think, if we had to pick one team today to go play Gonzaga, I would pick Florida State to represent the league. Right. I know Virginia gets that opportunity this weekend, and they get a chance to prove where they stand and where are they right now. But they better bring their A game, because I'm telling you what now, the Zags and Baylor are the two teams that have jumped out to me as legit problems. And there are others, but the ACC, to see who jumps into the top 10 or can even get there, Wes, is going to be a really kind of a fascinating question and a topic, I think, as we kind of roll into January and February.
Yeah, I'm with you on that part. So we'll keep an eye on basketball. But yesterday we had a chance to visit with the winner of the Jacobs Blocking Trophy. And you talk about a guy who's got a full scouting report. He's going to dot All-American teams. He's a finalist for the Outland Trophy. And a guy who, to be honest with you, I think has a very, very bright future. But we started with Liam Eichenberg of Notre Dame by saying, we know Saturday didn't work out for you, but Notre Dame's had a great fall in football.
We pride ourselves very highly on finishing every single play on the offensive line. You know, there's a great culture that's been established way before I got here, including Zach Martin, you know, Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson. And, you know, we're just trying to head into the playoffs and take it one day at a time, improve every single day, and we're looking forward to it.
Liam, when you guys go to work on a Saturday, I know it's a collaborative effort. There are a lot of guys who 5 years in. You're in a group with Ian and some of these other guys. I got to imagine that's also made this fall pretty special too, right? To be a part of this and see it really from the ground up.
Yeah, it's definitely something special, especially dealing with this irregular season, you know, dealing with COVID. But it's definitely nice having an experienced quarterback back there, somebody who's able to command the line of scrimmage, and, you know, he's able to make checks, and he's a leader, you know. So that's very – it's nice having him back there, somebody you trust. And at the same time, it's nice playing with guys for multiple seasons who see everything the same way you do. You know, on the offensive line, we always talk about seeing it through one set of eyes. And, you know, with this group, we have an experienced group, and I wouldn't want to play with anyone else.
Liam, I've always found offensive linemen always have their own clique. I mean, you guys have your own deal going on, right? And the fact that you guys have been hanging around and playing together for 3-4 years, have we welcomed Ian Book as kind of like an extension of the offensive line club? Because he's been hanging out with you guys for a long time, too.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's definitely part of the offensive line. You know, we like to incorporate the tight ends, too, and the running back. So, you know, it's a unique culture here. I'm not sure it's like any other in the country. But, yeah, Book's definitely part of our room, for sure.
So wait a second then. With Marin Williams, how does that work with the initiation process being young guys like they are?
Yeah, you know, obviously there's some times where you got to mess with them a little bit. But Karin's proven himself. Michael Mayer, you just turn the film on Saturday and you see what they're capable of doing. And, yeah. You know, what they sacrifice in the film room and off the field. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have those guys on our team.
Now listen, I know Book likes throwing to the tight ends, but as an offensive lineman, now your guys are like, hey, listen, don't get used to catching all those passes. We like to put people in the dirt. I mean, that's part of the love up front with that offensive line.
Yeah, it definitely is. And that's one of the things we prided ourselves on coming into this season. You know, the biggest thing was we need to run the ball. We need to be efficient on third down. And, you know, we need to stay ahead of the chains. And this season we've done a great job of running the ball. Obviously, this past Saturday wasn't where we wanted to be. But, you know, I think that's a fluke and we're going to come back stronger than ever.
Liam, if there is anything about being in this playoff now, the exclusivity of these final four, it oftentimes draws a lot of controversy, a lot of conjecture. But if you're one of those teams, you got to feel like you've really got something substantial in play here, right?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing we say is, you know, all we need is a chance, you know. And we're very excited to have that opportunity. But at the same time, we do believe we're one of the top four teams in the country just based on our schedule, strength of schedule, and, you know, who we've played. Clemson is a great team, one of the best in the country. And, you know, we're looking forward to play Alabama. They're a great team, great defensive line, all around, great coaching staff, and it's a great opportunity.
Liam, what do you think you guys learned from the first go-round in the college football playoff? And I know this has been a strange year with COVID and, you know, the starts, the stops. I get all that stuff. But does it feel different the second go-around as you now get prep work for Alabama that, hey, or is this just another game? I mean, you tell me.
You know, we talk about Notre Dame. Every game's a big game. So, you know, obviously this is a playoff, so there's going to be more hype around it, more media. But for guys on our team, you know, it's just another game. And, you know, compared to 2 years ago, I mean, our offensive line was extremely young. We're playing a veteran defensive line. Clemson was just on a roll. But, you know, this year we believe that we can win. And we're excited for the opportunity. And, you know, we just got to go out there and prove it.
Liam, in doing some reading about your play here in the last couple of years, I guess it's been, 2018 since you allowed a sack? Because the last 2 years it hasn't happened. I know you say you take a lot of pride in it, but, man, that's some kind of endurance stat right there. What's the secret to really good line play? Because I think people hear about it, but I'm not sure they understand – you know, kind of the connectivity involved with the four other guys in addition to just your individual effort out there at the edge.
Yeah, you know, what I do is just a testament to what everybody on my offensive line does. You know, and my coaches, you know, Jeff Quinn, he's done a great job this year with the offensive line. Tommy Reese and Coach Kelly, Lance Taylor, you know, they've all done a really good job preparing me for every single game, you know, and that's true for over the past couple years. But, you know, the key to being a good offensive lineman is, you know, finishing and taking pride in what you do. You know, you have to love football. You have to love blocking. You have to be physical. You have to come out there every single day and enjoy what you do. But, you know, our room is one of the closest rooms in the country. Robert Hainsey, he's our right tackle. He pushes me every single day. You know, Aaron Banks, Tommy Kramer. Sadly, Jarrett Patterson got hurt. But, you know, we have guys that step in. You know, Josh Lugg, he did a good job. And he's only going to get better. So, you know, it's just a testament to my room.
Liam, I'm going to ask you a multiple-part question here. All right, I'm going to just kind of do rapid fire. And you can include yourself if you want. When it comes to offensive line play, who's got the best feet?
Robert Hainsey.
All right. Who's got the best hands?
I would say I do.
You do, all right. Who's got who's the nastiest of the bunch?
I would say I am or Aaron Banks. You know, he's a big body. We call him the dancing bear. He can move pretty well.
All right, well, let me ask you this then. If it came down to you two in a loser leave town match, but you can still get to play against Alabama, who wins that match?
You know, I don't know. He's a big man, but it'd be a good be a good fight, you know.
All right.
Hopefully
last question. Oh, yeah, hopefully.
Wait a second.
For Brian
it's
Kelly
a big
hopes
man
that doesn't
talking
happen.
About a big man.
That's right. All right. Who is the best eater?
Yeah.
Josh Lugg.
Ooh.
Definitely Josh Lugg.
Why?
You know, he just loves eating food. You know, some guys just love doing it. They got to watch their weight. But, you know, he's a great guy. He works hard. And, you know, I'm happy that he's in my room.
All right, one last question. Of everybody you faced this year in the ACC, what was the toughest individual matchup for you?
You know, I would say Clemson's defensive end, number 98. I think his name's Miles Murphy. You know, he's a freshman, but, you know, I have a lot of respect for him. He's going to be a really good player. And, you know, overall, Clemson has a really good defense and just great competition.
Miles Murphy was the answer, who, by the way, was nowhere to be found on first, second, or third team All-ACC yesterday. Just saying.
Right.
You just gave 98 a major chip on shoulder. He is going to be a humongous problem for everyone for the next 2 years for sure. Just saying.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday special, because this is our last live show of the week. And ESPN's wised up and said, man, please, guys, go away. Please, just go away for a couple days. You can come back next week if you're in the mood. All right. Our next guest, I've known this dude for a long, long time. And he is the current golf coach at Clemson University. Been doing it now for 38 years, and I was there watching the transition of power from Bobby Robinson to Larry Penley, and Larry has been rocking it since, and he's done an incredible job. My partner right there, Larry Penley. Larry, first of all, welcome to the show. Hope the family's doing well. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and all that good stuff.
Same to you, fellas. It's great seeing you.
All right, so... And, you know, how, first of all, how are we hitting it? Are we hitting it? Are we still keeping the short grass, and just making a bunch of putts and just kind of cruising around and doing your thing? What's the story there?
Well, the fact that I just am hitting it is kind of a story in itself. I mean, I literally went knee surgeries and bad backs and all kind of mess. I went quite a long time without playing, but I have probably played 4 or 5 times in the last 2 months. And it's wow. It's really fun. I mean, every time I play, it's like I miss it so much. Why do I not do it more? But then I find excuses not to. So
yeah, anyway. Well,
but it's fun.
I know the feeling, because you know you get out of the rhythm, and all of a sudden you can let it get away from you, and you'll never see it again. Because I've gone 23 years and change, and you know I don't miss it. You know I don't miss a lick. But it's such a great game, though, man. It's, you know, it follows you for life if you're in the mood.
Well, it's exercise. And you and I both need to get our butts outside and exercise. Sitting down all dadburn day ain't doing nobody any good.
Well, I mean, you speak.
We need to exercise.
Well, first of all, speak for yourself. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I'll let you handle that one for you. I don't mind sitting down here with the dogs for 18 hours a day down here in the basement running my mouth as if I know something. So, you know, to each their own on all that stuff.
Good at it.
Well, I mean, you know, if somebody's dumb enough to pay you to do it, I'll stay down here in the basement for as long as they'll let me. It's the way that works. Plus, you know, plus Mrs. P loves it because I don't bother her at all. She goes about her day, never sees me, so it's a win-win proposition from that perspective. She just, you know, slide Perfect. A sandwich or something underneath the door and feed me every now and then, and then off we go. How's the golf team, by the way? We good, bad, and different? What are we doing?
No, we're good. We're just chomping at the bits to play. You know, we didn't – I think the last time we competed was the second week of March. And we shot 27 under par at the Palmetto Club and won by 20. And we were really ready to rock and roll and get on with our spring season. And we have not played since competitively. So we are just dying to play. You know, the we had our – the NCAA cut our legs out from under us last year, and then the ACC cut our legs out from under us this fall. So they didn't let us compete this fall. But they did open it up starting January 1. So we are leaving for January 15th for our first tournament. And I don't think the guys have ever been more ready. You know, with the weather around here, even though we had the COVID, golf in the upstate of South Carolina right now, you can't get a tee time. The golf courses are perfect. You know, all the Cliffs properties, the reserve properties, even our munis, I've never seen Boscobel better. You know, the Walker course, you can't get a tee time. You know, golf being outside right now, the weather has been tremendous. We haven't missed a day, Mark. I mean, we have practiced and played. I don't think the guys could be more ready to compete.
Larry, as you know, I tend to follow college golf maybe a little closer than the average guy, you know, based on, you know, kind of who I'm married to and such. If I were to ask you why golf was, I won't. After all, Pack, a little secret. Coach Penley used to put the boys out on the course out there in Vegas in Clark County, Nevada during the ACC basketball tournament. They'd go out there and put them on the golf course, and Larry and my bride would slip away and have brunch and lunch at the Bellagio and watch the noon games of the ACC tournament at the bar. So there you go. There's all that, I guess. But anyway.
That's good coaching. Larry, when you, I was going to say that's good coaching. I don't know why anybody's complaining.
Larry, why do you think that golf got sacrificed in this process? Because to me, the NCAA, you could have had a fall schedule. You could have had, in many ways, you could have done a lot of things to set the table for what's going to be a big spring anyway. But I heard from more people in the college golf circles about the schedule not being allowed to take place in the fall. And I was, quite frankly, pretty surprised about the process.
Yeah, we all were, too. I think they were a little afraid of travel. I think the travel concerns, the unknowns about flying. You know, we drive to most of our tournaments, so it really wasn't that big of a deal to us. But, you know, I think that was a concern for the NCAA. Now, the ACC this past fall, I think it strictly was a financial decision. I think they were just trying to find a way to save money. You know, our soccer programs have played two ACC championships since we've played one. You know, so we felt a little bit slighted, but our league is so good. You know, when play was stopped in March, I think we had five teams in the top 12, you know, seven in the top 20, you know, so we're ready to do some damage in the NCAA championships. Not to mention really looking forward to a fantastic ACC championship, but just the fact that we didn't get to play really hurt.
Larry, I always like to talk to golf coaches and talk about recruiting. Because the kids now, again, if you people were watching TV over the weekend, they saw Tiger Woods' kid, Charlie. He's, what, 11, 12 years old, and he's turning
I've
on
it. I sent him a letter.
Yeah.
You sent him a letter.
I mean, you know, the kid's 12 years old, and he's got the shoulder turn, and he's got, I mean, you're like, goodness gracious, kid's 12 years old and just dogging and dear old dad out there. Was a pretty good player, this guy, Tiger Woods. But I always get a kick out of listening to golf coaches talk about how good the talent is coming in the junior ranks. And, you know, again, I played 100 years ago, as you well know. And it's amazing how good the players are, how far they hit it. I know equipment and the balls changed and the turf, and I get all that. But still, you still got to golf your ball. And the kids now that are coming through junior golf, it is unbelievable how much talent that's out there.
Athletes. They are phenomenal athletes. You know, I know they're still playing baseball, you know, and I know some of them are still playing football and tennis, but man, are they really jumping on board with golf? And I think this COVID situation probably is going to help it even more. I mean, I think there's going to be more and more and more and more talent. I mean, you look at our team, you know, when we get out of the van, we look like a swim team. You know, they're all 6'2", 6'3". I've got one that's 6'5". They've all got big shoulders. They've all got 45 and 46-inch drivers, and they pound it. You know, the game has kind of gone in that direction. Good or bad or indifferent, that's just the way it is.
All right, Larry, let's go back to when you had real athletes, though, shall we? Let's talk about
the original swim team.
classic American Gil Thorpes in your lives. Okay, that's you on the front row. And in the back row with a Trevor Lawrence haircut is one Mark Packer out of Davie County High School.
There you go.
Give us a quick thumbnail on the versatile Packer, apparently a key cog in the success of the Clemson golf program.
He's one of the best left-handed players we've ever had. You know, there's no doubt about that. One of the best lefties. I don't think we've had but two.
That's you know, it. So. I'm in the top five, and we've only had two.
Yeah. And Mark's in the top five.
Yeah.
No, we really had a good time. We had a talented team when he was there.
Yeah.
I think his in 82, the year before I started coaching, I think we finished fifth in the NCAAs. I think that was Mark's freshman year.
Yep.
And that was Dillard Pruitt and Norman Chapman and Julian Taylor. And
McPhee.
And Jim McPhee, Charles Rollerson. I mean, there was a lot of All-Americans in that crowd. And it was really a good bunch. So Mark come up watching some really good golf from the Clemson golf team.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I organized every championship party. And, you know, you got to have a guy like that. You know, you got to find your spot. You know, you go out there and shoot 73, 74, you're eight back with this group now. There were some dudes that could play, they could golf their ball, but it was so much fun. I mean, the relationships and the ties, even from 40 years ago, is what makes it special. And, you know, Larry and I became buds. And that transition with Bobby Robinson, who was the golf coach my freshman year, became the athletic director. And Larry came back to get his degree. And so it was kind of the perfect storm, though, wasn't it, Larry? I mean, you just, hey, right place, right time. And, man, the job you've done there has been nothing short of sensational.
Well, it's all about timing. I mean, it really is all about timing. I had been playing down in Homestead, Florida, living in Homestead, Florida. Golf had become cumbersome. It had become work. You know, and I talk to my players about this all the time. You know, you got to continue to love it and love what you do. Love the journey. I had kind of lost my journey. And Bobby Robinson had given me a great opportunity to come back and finish and help him with the golf team. And timing's everything. I mean, it really is everything. And then soon after that, he became athletic director and had to give the golf team up. So I happened to be at the right place at the right time. So it was pretty good.
Now, look at this.
He handed me the keys, and it's, you know, we just finished fifth in the country, like I said, and it was one of them deals like, all right, don't mess it up, you know. So I've spent 38 years trying not to mess it up just for him. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we've made him proud at times.
Yeah, you've done an awesome job.
I want to ask you real quick here before we wrap about the ACC, and in particular – the dominance. You have Doc Redmond, then Bruce Hepler at Georgia Tech has Andy Ogletree and Tyler Strafasi. What in the world is the story with this league and the U.S. amateur event? And can you just kind of identify two or three guys that we need to look for this spring who are going to be factors on the national scene in college golf that we may see in this league?
Yeah, I think there's a whole lot of them. I don't know if you're going to have a dominant player like Andy Ogletree or even a Doc Redmond. But yeah. I think the next one's there. I mean, I really do. I've got a senior laden bunch. I've got three guys. One of them is a returning All-American. Another junior is a preseason All-American. And we're just waiting on them to bust loose. And every team in the league can say the same thing. Wake Forest is loaded with superstars. Duke is loaded with superstars. Unfortunately for Georgia Tech, they got bit by the USAM curse, and it is at times a curse. Andy turned pro. Strafasi has kind of chosen to opt out. So, you know, he had the opportunity to be playing with two USAM champs on one team. Mm. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. So right now, you know, don't feel sorry for him because his stable is not bare. He has a lot of great players there. But it's really going to be fun this spring. We can't wait to play.
By the way, I'm glad that we were able to get 12 to 15 minutes of this interview without some stories about you and I walking over to Court 93 and then crawling back to 152 Issaquena Trail because – There's some crazy stories out there with us that we have to deny a lot of these, Larry. Got to deny a lot of these stories.
Mother's Finest might have been one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life. I think I saw it. I was told I was there.
You were there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, it was good. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Mark Court's and I order. Had a blast. Yeah. Mark and I had a blast.
Hey, best of Heidi and the family, man. Always a pleasure. And again, happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Merry Christmas, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham coming up top of the hour. More awards, right? Player of the year, rookie of the year, all that cool stuff. Defensive player of the year, offensive player of the year. The official tabulations are in. Yep.
And late ad, Kevin Keats, 9:30 this morning on Packer and Durham after last night's victory over North Carolina.
Like it. Jay Billis next hour.
Yeah, there we go. We got this is turning out to be a good show. We deserve 2 days off after this show.
Well, we're exhausted. I mean, seriously, this the amount of work that you and I put into this versus the smart people in Bristol, we are truly exhausted after 3 hours of this every day, I can assure you.
There you go. All right. Every time we visit with a student athlete, and you've heard Pac say, favorite part of the show is when we get to visit with the student athletes, and they have been tremendous again this year. Well, our crack staff at Packer and Durham, Inc., LLC, has put together some of the best responses to a staple of this program when Packer always says, what's been your hardest class?
I ask this question to every student athlete. During your career at Florida State, at Wake Forest, Boston College, at the University of Louisville, what has been the hardest class?
Ooh.
Oh, man.
It's a tough question.
Ooh. My most difficult course.
I try to pride myself on being a pretty good student.
Not even close. I took honors organic chemistry my first semester in college.
The hardest class I had at Clemson was a music class.
I had a public policy class last semester that really hurt me.
Beethoven and I don't know.
I had to do so many papers, and the papers would be real long. I don't know what you could talk about for 10 pages.
I decided to take like an astronomy class for some odd reason.
I really enjoyed AP chemistry in high school, and I had convinced myself coming in that I was going to be a chem major. And organic chem quickly decided that I wasn't going to be a chem major.
I did good. I did good, mom and dad. I did good in class, but it worked me.
All those old, like Mozart,
Tchaikovsky,
stuff like that.
That kind of thing?
Beethoven, yeah, exactly. That name just rung a
Mozart.
Bell. Yeah.
You're thinking astronomy. You're thinking the Big Dipper, right? The North
exactly
Star.
Right.
You're thinking solar system, right?
I'm going to cringe if you answer this the way I think you might.
I had to say Spanish.
I would have to say Spanish. Spanish. Yeah.
Spanish is not, in my opinion, the hard. I took 3 years of Spanish at Louisville.
I'm not going to lie to you. Probably Spanish.
And
I know
knew
one
it.
Of my other. Oh. I know one of my other teammates said that, and I didn't want to say that, but it's true.
My freshman algebra class was the hardest for me.
Probably this calculus course that I'm in right now.
My finite math class.
Stats for business.
It would have to be math 15, 25, or 26.
And it just hit, and it.
We ain't use much numbers in the math class.
I just felt like the whole math was just in a different language.
Being in that class, like,
this isn't for me.
Yeah.
I just lost the ability of math after high school.
Only because I had to teach myself.
You had to teach yourself. What's the story there?
What? Whoa, what?
Well, info classes, they're online, so you have to teach yourself the math.
Hey, Durham, how about that deal? Wes Durham is notorious on this show for having issues with math, algebra, calculus, whatever the case may be.
Math was my Achilles in the worst possible way. As a three-time attempter at finite math, math would be the downfall of a lot of people, my man. It's a long, sorrowful tale about me and math, but calculus, man, I just shudder thinking about that.
My hardest course was definitely econ.
The econ 101.
Don't look forward to Charleston, the economist in the future.
Now, come on. Let me tell you, econ's easy. I'm just going to tell you for future consideration, I was an economics major, so you're talking to an econ major right here. You know, I was an econ guy at Clemson, and if you got some issues, I'm a phone call away to help you out on that. So if I can ever be of help.
Charles, Charles, no, no. There'll be no calling Packer.
You work on my hair, I'll work on your econ. We'll be good to go. All right? Is that a fair deal?
Got to.
All right. The student athletes are awesome. And I tell you, it's my favorite part of this show. We get great guests, which are tremendous. But really, the stars on and off the court and on this show are the student athletes of the ACC. And I think that folks who have watched our show religiously on television now for the last year and a half or whatever it is, 285 shows, when they come on, it's amazing how poised they are. They have no idea who we are. I mean, it's not like you're talking to a next-door neighbor or your brother or sister. They got no idea who we are. They come on here. They're relaxed. They're loose. They can have conversations. They cut up with us. And I think it's what separates our conference from everybody else. It's one thing to talk about championships and winning games and putting up banners. But, man, what they do in the classroom, getting their degrees, how they handle themselves, moving on through life, that's what separates the ACC from everybody else.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.